Good Lord. Welcome to This Is Gonna Be Good.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome back.
Welcome to our show.
It's a Sunday.
It's a Sunday.
That's for sure.
Welcome back to This Is Gonna Be Good. Oh my God. I can't tell you how glad I am to be here. I'm so glad to be on our little show and talk to my friend Quentin.
Yeah.
Otherwise known as Quinn.
One of my besties, Carol.
I think that's getting to be the case. I have warm feelings.
We've definitely gotten close.
Yeah. And we've literally not, I hate it when I overuse the word literally. I'm gonna work on that during this show. Anyway, we have not seen each other in person since last winter, like so many people.
Yeah, last winter you came to my show.
Yeah, that's right. So the Christmas show.
That's
the last time.
Mm-hmm.
Get out of town. All right. Well, anyway, here we are. There's a lot going on this week.
There's a lot to talk about in the news.
I don't even know where to start. I know that this show is going to be airing a couple weeks from now. I guarantee that most of this will still be quite current.
Usually.
So let's go.
So let's shoot. Let's start with guns. Guns, guns, guns.
Let's shoot. Oh, God. So yeah, I guess mass shootings were jealous of COVID-19. And came roaring back.
I was looking at this timeline of the mass shootings. Like in 2012, we had the mosque shooting. And then after that, we had...
When was Columbine?
Columbine was years ago.
Because that was the first big one that... Certainly not the first big one, but it was the first big one that resonated with me.
Yeah. I remember I was a kid. I remember they didn't show Buffy the Vampire Slayer because it was about a school shooting episode. They couldn't air it.
Oh, my God.
I don't think they aired it for like a couple weeks. And it's one of the best episodes they've ever done. But I do remember that.
Wow.
What I was reading, though, was about how in 2012, there was a mosque shooting. And then in like 2014, they listed the Pulse shooting.
Yeah.
They listed the Black people at the church shooting. They like basically every marginalized group has been getting mass murdered like every couple years. And so now we're here with Asian women.
But it's not just marginalized groups. That's the thing. I mean, I know a parent of those kids in
Sandy Hook.
Yes. I did shows with them. I know them, you know.
And that's terrible. But what I'm saying is like, yes, we have a problem with guns overall and with mass shootings, but...
Yeah. Well, it's frequently linked to hate, like some sort of white supremacy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
that's what
sure.
It was saying. This instance, this is a racially motivated hate crime that is a mass
right.
shooting. So like, they were breaking down... A lot of these shootings, I even forgot.
Well, that's the problem. It's similar to all the instances of Black people being brutalized and or murdered by police. Mm. I can't keep them straight anymore. Amadou Diallo.
It's so many. And then we don't even hear about them. Like,
yeah.
Indigenous people.
Oh, God.
Like, we don't even hear about that as much.
No. Women disappearing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We need to do something about guns. We have to do something. It's about time. I'm young enough to remember how big Columbine was. We should have taken steps with that.
Yeah.
You're right. It's past time. We need to do something now.
Yeah. It's incredible to me that Sandy Hook wasn't enough.
You have people pretending that didn't even happen.
Yeah.
Like, that's how crazy that is.
Yeah. Well, they finally got sued. But yeah, there's still people doing that. That was stupid Alex Jones.
That's insane to me. People are perpetuating mass shootings just to get people to take guns away. It's just such crazy gaslighting shit. We can't do this anymore. I'm not going to have to. I don't want to go back to like not being able to go outside because of not the pandemic, but because mass shootings. I've been afraid to go to theaters like in the back of my mind ever since the Dark Knight Returns shooting.
Oh, God. Yeah.
I've had something in the back of my mind about going to see movies opening nights ever since that.
Yeah. And with catering, I used to work big events all the time, either in the back of the house or the front of the house. And I would think of it then. I mean, I have not walked around in fear of terrorist attacks or shootings since 9/11 or since any of these shootings full out the way I know some people have. But it's been in the back of my mind. And it's ridiculous to have to live that way. You know,
yeah.
It's just uncanny. And the next time, here's what I think should happen to Republicans right now. Every single thing that happens to them, let's say a Republican has a heart attack, the doctor should say, now is not the time to talk about your heart attack. You know, their house burns down. Like, oh, now is not the time to talk about the fact that your house burns down.
To talk about that.
Like, somebody shoots 10 people and now's not the time to talk about it?
No.
Somebody shoots 8 people, 6 of them Asian women, we're not supposed to talk about it?
They can't even get together.
I can't believe they're even still saying that.
The sheriff said that it wasn't racially motivated. The guy himself says that he did it because of his own sexual, to prevent his sexual attraction. Just because you sexually fetishize Asian women, that is racist.
Yeah, no, and who knows what the fuck is up with that guy, pardon my language, but we can't let him diagnose himself as a sex addict. Something's clearly wrong with that guy, but that doesn't excuse his whatever. But back to the sheriff. I mean, I think people shouldn't be pressuring law enforcement, call it a hate crime, racially motivated, because they have to have really specific criteria to try to make that stick in court. I think we should call it that if it seems like that. But I don't always blame law enforcement for not rushing to call it that because they want these charges to stick in court.
Well, I mean, you assume they do. I don't get that from this guy who say he had a bad day.
The bald guy.
I don't think that's the situation here.
You know, I had the very unpopular opinion of thinking that people rush to judgment on him. And I know that every single person in the world disagrees with me, except probably Trumpers or something, people that I never agree with. And I don't necessarily agree with myself anymore. But what I didn't like about that is that people put out a soundbite of what he said rather than listening to the whole press conference. And that guy was quoting what the shooter said to him. Mm-hmm. Now, I actually think he shouldn't have been doing that. I think that was unprofessional and ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, that guy was the communications person of the sheriff's department, and he is no longer in that job. And obviously, that should not have been his job. I was saying that people were being unfair to him, saying that he was taking the side of the shooter. And if you watch the entire press conference, he doesn't seem to be doing that to me, mm-hmm. and was very thankful to the families for helping to turn that guy in and all that stuff. But unconsciously, maybe there was some sympathy on his part or something that made him feel like he needed to at least tell us what the shooter said about himself, you know?
Where would his past comments about Asians fit in all that, though?
Well, but you say comments plural, but there was only one thing on his Facebook that was from last April 2020. If he was really such a hate monger, that guy, he would have a bunch of offensive stuff on his Facebook, not just one thing from last April.
I don't think so. I don't think that...
He just didn't have a Facebook full of anti-Asian or anti-COVID stuff.
How many does it take? How many does he need to have? Five? Does he need to have six?
I think it would have made more of an impact if he had recent stuff, not one thing from last April 2020.
I think him being in the position that he is, even one is too much.
Yeah, no, I agree. I like I said, I ended up pretty much disagreeing with myself 7 days later. I don't like the let's get the pitchforks thing that happens on Twitter or social media in general, where mm-hmm. 30 seconds in, people grab a soundbite, throw it up, make a judgment about it, and say, track this man, find this man's address, start giving him death threats, because that's what was happening. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's warranted. I don't think that helps us as a country to rush to judgment. That's all.
I don't agree with that. I think it's obvious why I don't agree.
You think
agree
we should rush to judgment and get out the pitchforks?
I don't necessarily think we should rush to judgment, but I'm not going to be as forgiving. I'm going into this assuming what you've always shown me, that you are the bad guy here. Mm-hmm. And you finagled your way into this position, and I have to assume that there's something with that. I don't look at cops as these, altruistic, they just want to save people. Some of them do,
right.
But I don't, I've seen too much.
Yeah.
And I've experienced too much bias to believe that. So for you to sit there and feel that way, I don't blame that you feel that way. I don't think it's right for anybody to gang up. The internet can be a hateful place.
Yeah.
And I'm not suggesting that we attack people that don't deserve it. But he says something for whatever reason. Uh-huh. He says something that offended a lot of people.
Yeah, for sure. And they were right to be offended.
Then they found this comment. So it walks like a duck. It talks like a duck. I thought it was a duck from a distance.
And I ended up finding it offensive too, just to be clear. But I am very worried about the rush to judgment across the board.
I know. I would be careful.
Not about police officers. I mean, I want everybody to take a breath. I will not post somebody's picture online without doing a lot of research. I just won't.
Hey, I understand that. Wanting to cross your T's and dot your I's, I don't see anything wrong with that.
I do.
I see a lot of white people willing to stick up for white people in situations like this. Uh-huh. And then they turn out to be wrong, and then they get it too.
Yeah.
I would tell you as a white person to be careful.
I am a white person, but I want to be clear. I'm not sticking up for white people here.
Oh, I get it. You're sticking for a white person.
I'm coming out against the broad brush mm-hmm. that people use on social media, where they're quick to attack. If I'm going to post someone's picture and say, look at this asshole, I will go and look at the entire press conference first. I'll spend at least 30 minutes looking for information mm-hmm. before I post somebody's picture. I ended up coming down agreeing with it. I was just worried about the rush. That's all. For anybody.
I get it. I'm just saying.
But I understand your point too.
Yeah. This is you're not going to like it, but this is a boomer millennial thing. We're not going to agree on it. We agree on certain aspects of it, but for the most part.
I actually don't think it is. I think I stand alone here.
I don't think so. I think there's literally five things you said. But I know that I would hear from a boomer who is defending this man.
But no, I'm not defending this man. Once again.
I know. I'm just saying.
No, but you don't know because you keep saying I'm doing that. But here's the thing. I think I stand alone because
it's what you said.
You got to let me finish. Boomers, just like everybody else, millennials, everybody, are very quick to judge on social media.
True.
That's why I stand alone here. This has nothing to do with me being a boomer. This has to do with me personally, Carol, not liking it when people pull out the pitchforks. And people are much more likely to do it to somebody of color, by the way.
Yes.
Because that is exactly the same thing. Jumping to a conclusion about anybody is bad.
I think that is absolutely true. But I think that there's a lot more of it being sometimes justified when it's not a person of color.
Yeah, and I'm not justifying the guy's behavior. Uh-huh. I'm literally just talking about jumping to conclusions. And I agree with you that I don't think he was a good person. He probably is racist, certainly unconsciously racist, if not consciously. And it was ridiculous for him to be telling us what that guy said, that he calls himself a sex addict or whatever. That
it wasn't ridiculous. A good look. It turned out to be an even worse look when you took a deeper look into it. My thing is, and this is where I'll leave it, I don't know if this man is racist. I don't. All I know is that he did a lot of suspect shit.
Yeah.
Suspect shit came out about him. He shouldn't have said anything that he said.
I want to see more suspect things, but you're right.
No, I don't think that's necessary. You serve the public. Uh-huh. That should not be uh-huh. anywhere in your language whatsoever.
Right. He should be more responsible. You're right.
Even that's something that should never have been posted publicly. He never yeah. should have said it. Nothing. There is no like, I want more.
That
no,
I agree with. That's enough. That I agree with.
And though if I knew him personally, maybe I would feel differently. I cannot say that I feel bad for people to say you saying that one thing is enough for me to think that you are a piece of shit. And this makes you suspect and what you did suspect. I can't argue with that. And that's just.
I see your point. I don't disagree with it. I just really want to be clear that this is not me as a boomer. This is me as a person. Mm-hmm. That has a personal issue with people jumping to conclusions about anyone. And like I said, I think it happens more often to people of color.
Well, the goal is for it not to be. Let's get it happening to as many white people as possible.
And as many times as I've attacked white people on this show, as you know.
I know.
You always say you're surprised. I'm not coming down on the side of white people. Speaking of white people, I actually don't know anything about what happened to Sharon. I almost said Sharon Stone. Sharon Osbourne.
Well, okay, so Sharon Osbourne, who we both know is British.
Yeah, I know that about her.
She's friends with Piers Morgan.
Ooh, okay. I hate Piers Morgan.
A lot of people do.
And that's not jumping to conclusions. That's based on a lot of information.
Yes, a lot of information.
He's a horrible person.
He had problems, personal issues with Meghan Markle, with the whole royal thing. Then when it came out, because he didn't like her, the accusation from his co-host, Alex, who is biracial, I believe, basically just said, whether or not you don't like her, this is a serious allegation and you ignoring it is making you appear racist. I don't think you're racist, but this is how you come across. You're supporting the royal. Blah, blah, blah.
And he stormed off.
He stormed off. Now, cut to us in America. He stormed off and got fired.
Yeah.
Now, you walk off any job, I feel like you should get fired.
Sure.
Cut to us over across the pond here. Sharon Osbourne has a problem. She's saying that she doesn't feel he's racist. Ugh. He's a close friend of hers. It hurts her to hear that her close friend is being called racist when she knows that he's not. Cheryl Underwood, who is a very funny Black comedian, who is on the show, explains to her why what he did was problematic, tried to give her an idea of what people are talking about. And Sharon was very condescending about it. I don't know if Sharon Osbourne is racist. The comments that she made afterwards, or that came out that she said afterwards about her co-hosts, those are problematic. I knew that she called Leah Remini and Holly Robinson Pete ghetto.
What?
During their first season of the show. Now, anytime an Italian woman is too colorful for you, you're in trouble.
Wait, who's Italian? Oh, Leah Remini?
Leah Remini.
Okay. Also Scientologist. Recovering Scientologist.
Recovering Scientologist. They first met while doing the show and became like really good friends. Leah Remini is not a woman of color, but she's Italian and she has some, New York to her. And
yeah.
I guess she got along with Holly. And they were a good time on the show. I used to watch them. Sharon didn't like it. They ended up being fired after their first season.
Oh, my goodness.
Supposedly because Sharon said that they were too ghetto. Sharon says she had no control over who was hired or fired because basically it was Julie Chen's show. And still Julie Chen's show, I believe.
I've never seen that show either.
It's a like B-grade View.
I know what it is. Also never seen The View.
It goes like The View, The Talk, The Real. That's like how the rating of the shows go.
Oh, okay.
So anyway, she said she had no control over it, but then it came out that she made comments calling Julie Chen slant-eyed or something about her facial features and being Asian.
Oh my goodness.
And then the ghetto comments came out about Holly Robinson Pete, who is a Black woman, and Leah Remini, who is Italian. I would say like the Black people of white people, but that's Irish, so that's not true.
Well, it used to be the Italians too. They also used to be the Black people of white people.
Yeah. So anyway, she got fired, which I had no doubt she was going to get fired because I watched the exchange between her and Sheryl Underwood and it was very cringeworthy. I get where she was coming from. She was doing the whole rush to judgment thing and it didn't work for her.
Who was doing the rush to judgment?
She was saying that everyone was doing the rush to judgment about Piers Morgan.
But no, see, that's impossible because we have a lot of information about Piers Morgan.
But she was going on the fact that she knows him personally and she doesn't think so. Okay. And even Alex, his co-host, said that he didn't think that Piers Morgan was racist from knowing
him. I actually think people don't understand what racist means. I don't think there are any white people that aren't racist on some level.
True.
It's a matter of how conscious are you of it and how much do you not want to be racist and how much do you want to learn? Like even the back and forth that we just had, that was our most heated exchange previously there. That just makes me want to learn more. I've been re-examining my thoughts on that ever since it first occurred, whenever that was, a couple weeks ago. And all it makes me do is want to learn more. Mm-hmm. There are people that don't want to learn.
True.
You know, Piers Morgan doesn't strike me as somebody who wants to learn. All right.
As a black person, I think there's people who are willing to do the work for. There's a lot of white people in my life who I'm not willing to do the work for, who have said racially insensitive things or may hold some biases.
Right.
And they're not necessarily the devil, but they have work to do.
And they don't want to do it.
It's not even really that they don't necessarily want to do it. Like there's some white people who literally can't do the work because they don't have people of color in their life to help them do the work. You can't do it alone.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Yeah.
There's so many people who thought that they were not racist and went down that whole thing. Like, you know, oh, I don't see color, but you were around a lot of white people. You had no practical application of that.
Right.
And you get around people of color and you realize you do have biases. But if you don't have people to point that out to you, you can't do the work. So if a black person doesn't care enough or you don't know any black people to help you do the work, you're going to make mistakes.
Not seeing color is racist.
Yeah, but I think that as far as Piers Morgan went and even Sheryl Underwood, I think they were willing to do the work to like try to explain to Sharon and for Alex to try to explain to Piers. And if things happen like that, I'm more than, you know, happy to try to explain it with you. I know you. I get where you're coming from. So even if there's things you don't know, I get that.
Yeah.
But if nobody's willing to do the work with you and you're caught out in public saying these things, you're going to get backlash.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just it. And going back to what we were talking about before, it wasn't that I didn't agree with what you were saying necessarily or how you were saying it. It was that I was letting you know that what you could say could give you backlash. As a black person, I was explaining to you how that could get.
And I already understand it. Believe me, I got plenty of backlash already. And it all just made me think deeper, you know.
Yeah.
I still say my position is very much alone. Mm-hmm. Most people of all ages love to pile on immediately, pitchfork right there at the hand, and they love it. I think it's not our best trait as human beings to do that. I think we need to take a breath. That's all.
And when I say boomer, as a millennial, I accept it good and bad. I know the good things about millennials. I know the bad things about them. And I know when they're good and they're bad about me. And a lot of what we've seen from Trump and his ilk and everything is because they've taken a lot of boomerisms and they've made them bad.
Oh, he's the worst ilk.
They're not all bad.
Thank
and
you.
Boomers do share those things. I think because boomers have such a bad perception, like you distance yourself completely from it and you can't really do that because
no,
it's
I can't. No, I'm from whatever generation I'm from, for sure.
So exactly. So I have to take the bad millennial stuff along with the good.
I am on the cusp.
You are on the cusp.
Yeah. Oh my God.
We have one other thing. I'd like to discuss the Nichelle Nichols and her impact on NASA and connection to MLK.
Do you know about it?
I know that Nichelle Nichols had an impact on NASA because I know Mae Jemison said that's part of the reason she joined the space program.
And I knew that too, but here's what I didn't know. I didn't know that Martin Luther King begged her to stay on the show. She wanted to leave Star Trek.
I did know that.
I thought that was fascinating. And he said...
She said it was too difficult.
Yeah. And he said... And also she wanted to go to do other things. She's a singer. She wanted to do Broadway. She just wanted to do something different. She didn't know she was on a show that was going to be like so famous and groundbreaking and amazing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Just typical actor. She was like, oh, am I in the wrong job? What should I do? And he begged her to stay and told her how important it was for Black families, for Black children. I just thought that was fascinating and amazing. And then that also it impacted NASA, which was just white man world.
Mm-hmm.
And it was part of what prompted NASA to be more diverse.
Which is great considering we know what the Hidden Figures did.
Yeah.
If we go even further than that, I also knew that a lot of what happened with the show Star Trek Coming to Bob was because of Lucille Ball. And her production company had a lot to do.
That I don't know.
One of the shows that she pushed for was Star Trek.
What? So her and Desi Arnaz then.
Part of that. Apparently she was also big on it being diverse too.
Cool.
That's what I read. I don't know how true that is or how much that is.
Well, it's probably really true because people flipped out that she was in a relationship with a Cuban person.
A white Cuban person.
He might have been considered white Cuban, but he was not considered white American.
I get that.
And it was a big, hairy deal that they were kissing and they were a married couple and all that stuff. And nobody wanted him to be in charge of the production company. And he ended up making these revolutionary decisions. I think he was the first person that insisted they have rights to the show or something. And an audience.
So smart. It's completely funded their children because their children have never had to do anything
else. I know. That's true. They do some things, but yeah, you're right. He set everybody up pretty good.
They're set.
He was a little bit of a cheater, unfortunately, but.
Oh, more than a little. For
still very. Yeah, probably a lot. Still very handsome. Meg Tocantins is an old friend of mine. We worked together a long time ago, and she is a licensed hypnotist.
Yeah.
And I thought it would be really interesting to talk about that and take a little break from our often constant political conversations.
I do want to point out that a lot of our conversations are political because you don't know a lot about entertainment and pop culture, Carol.
Me? Yeah, that's true. Quentin's constantly referencing shows and stars and whatnot. And I'm like, I don't know who that is.
I don't She's
know
like, I watch the news 24 hours a day. That's all I know. So I'm like, okay, so that's what we're talking about.
That is not true. I don't watch the news 24 hours a day. I watch it about 15. Not quite that. But I am definitely more prone to be watching the Rachel Maddow or what have you and not The Bachelor. Mm-hmm. That's all.
Oh, that's a dig at me. Okay.
Oh. No. It's not a dig. It's just a statement of fact.
I'm just pulling your leg. So welcome, Meg. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you. It's nice to see you too.
Thank you. Likewise.
Carol, it's great to see you.
Oh, you too. I haven't seen you in ages.
Yeah.
Ever since I met you, which I don't remember when that was now, 5, 6 years ago, maybe more.
Yeah.
I've just been very interested that you were a hypnotist. Mm-hmm. And I don't know much about it. And lately it's come up because of a couple friends that have trouble sleeping. I think even Quinn's a person who's had trouble sleeping. Is that true? Off and on?
Yes, I do often have trouble sleeping. I'm a social worker. I've studied psychology. Mm-hmm. So I know a little bit about the relationship between hypnosis and cognitive behavior therapy. But I'm interested to learn more about it and hear, you know, exactly what you do and all that good stuff.
Yeah.
Cognitive behavior is very similar. Mm-hmm. Kind of the way you do it is a little bit different.
Right. I was reading that that's supposed to be a really sweet pair, cognitive behavior therapy paired with hypnosis, that it had good results for weight loss, which is a thing I need to work on now because I've put on the pandemic 40 or whatever it is. I don't even know. Not 40, but close enough. I know you've done it for a long time. How long have you done it and what prompted you to start studying hypnosis?
I got certified in 93, and I have been doing it off and on all that time.
What prompted you to start doing it, and what brought you to it?
When I was in college, I was petrified taking tests to the point that I would get sick and couldn't take the test. Everybody would realize that is only a short-term solution, because eventually you're going to have to take the test.
Right.
I think I was a sophomore then, and one of my psychology professors said, I can help you with that. I had 3 sessions with her. She didn't call it hypnosis, but when it was over, after the 3rd session, I said, was I hypnotized? And she said, yeah, that's not what I call it, but yes. So it worked. That's the most important thing. It worked. After being a sophomore, I was able to go to be a junior and did my comps, and I did all of those things, and I graduated. And I still don't like taking tests.
Right.
But at least I can get through it now and actually sometimes get good grades. So
Right. Well, like not in like therapy. I did psychoanalysis for 12 years. Close anyway. I was only able to afford to go twice a week most of the time. She really wanted me to go 3 times or more. I did go 3 times a week for a little while, but I just could, the money was like, I couldn't do it. But I went twice a week pretty much consistently for 12 years. And it doesn't make everything go away. It doesn't make you never have anxiety or whatever things that you had going on, but huge difference. Huge difference. Like I used to be a person that would cry and could not stop crying. I cried the most when I was angry. And instead of being able to express anger, I would burst into tears and I would not be able to stop crying. And it was horrible. And that is something that actually has gone away with therapy. I don't have that anymore. But other things, you know, whatever, trouble focusing sometimes, various things, I still have them. It's just easier to deal. I don't know.
It sounds like it helped you.
Yeah, but it sounds like similar to hypnotherapy. Like it's not a cure-all. It doesn't make something disappear. It makes it easier to manage.
No, that's any kind of psychological help. It doesn't cure anything, really. Drugs might.
Uh-huh.
What hypnosis does, that's a little bit different.
It doesn't take 12 years.
I don't know exactly what the process is for them.
Yeah.
With hypnosis, we talk about your conscious and your subconscious mind. And when you are hypnotized, while you are still completely aware and always in control, which some people get really scared about that,
right. You're
in control. We kind of put your conscious mind to the side, and then we start working with your subconscious, because you have stored everything you have ever learned in your subconscious, good things and bad things.
Mm. Right.
And what you're able to do in there is to help you figure out sometimes where that came from. I had somebody who came to me because she too couldn't sleep.
Mm-hmm.
She would wake up 4 times at night because she was afraid of something, or that she was afraid she'd sleep through her alarm. I hypnotized herself. I helped her just learn how to relax better.
Mm.
And then the second session, we sort of discovered that she had been in the army as a nurse, and she had to be at work at 5 in the morning. And she was afraid that if she slept through her alarm, the MPs would come up, knock on the door, and send her to a break. And, and she was scared to death of that.
Huh.
And so I said, "Are you somewhere somebody's going to take you to the break?" And she said, "No." And so we just worked at that. A little bit. I talked too. We both talked. And the next day she called me and she said, I walked into the operating room where she worked and she said, "I slept."
Wow.
And it was like everybody in the surgery started cheering because apparently she'd had a real problem.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's sort of what the hypnotist does. We kind of go in there and tweak a few things. Sometimes we discover something amazing. Sometimes we don't. It doesn't really matter.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, you change what's in your subconscious so that you think of things differently. It's not magic. I can't make anybody do anything they don't want to do, including, you know, bark like a dog or anything.
Or like act like a chicken. Can you make somebody act like a chicken?
Yeah. I said, you can do that without me hypnotizing you. You can bark like a dog. You know, actors and actresses, I always say, you don't have to be hypnotized to act like an idiot.
No. Some people just do it like rolling off a log.
Exactly.
See, one of the things I've always liked and what got me interested in psychology was the correlation between her having trouble sleeping and her, you know, being afraid to sleep through an alarm, and how being in the military affected that. Like, everything has a root. Learning that was comforting to me.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing, everybody's predisposed to a certain psychosis. You know, you're agoraphobic. Some people have eating issues. No matter who you are, if times get tough, there's something you do.
Yes.
And that was comforting to me. I love that. I love the work that's necessary in therapy. I find it fulfilling. I find both sides fulfilling, from facilitating it and receiving it.
Yes.
And if you are a therapist, you do need a therapist yourself. So that's one thing.
Yeah.
Psychoanalysts have to go through a full analysis themselves before they can become psychoanalysts.
You take on so much from other people. You just you get rained on with emotion and all that empathy. So
for sure.
Definitely.
Yeah. I really, really enjoyed psychoanalysis for the most part. I mean, I certainly didn't enjoy every second of it, but I never left regretting having gone. You know, it's kind of like when you go to the gym or exercise or whatever. You didn't want to go do that. But once you're done, you're like, oh yeah, I do feel better.
The thing about therapy for me, sometimes I feel really good and I go and then I leave feeling crappy. And then I have something to think about, something that kind of makes me less happy than I was when I got there.
True.
It's good for me. Sometimes it's the verse where I'm having a bad day and I go to therapy and therapy makes me happy or happier. Mm-hmm. So,
It didn't make me happy. It would just sometimes bring some things to clarity.
But Okay.
I just finally felt like it was taking too long. And I know I should have stayed longer probably. And it's also just so prohibitively expensive.
Mm-hmm.
I have giant debt. I have no money. And, I don't regret the money I spent doing that, but it wasn't affordable.
Yeah.
And I worry about people that have even less money than me. And what are other ways for them to heal? I don't know a single person that shouldn't be in some sort of therapy, frankly.
Everybody. I believe everybody.
It, everybody would benefit from it.
Yeah. They definitely would.
For sure. And I'm very interested in how hypnosis might speed things up a little bit.
It does.
For certain things, you know.
I happen to believe, because I am a hypnotist, that my job is to give you what will help you sort of change the way your mind is changing. We say mind, we don't just say your brain. Mm-hmm. And then after that, I give them the techniques that will help them do this themselves. Usually my sessions for people come to me to quit smoking is usually one session.
Oh, wow.
I charge a lot for that because what I do is I give them sort of, it's not a guarantee, but I say if you slip ever, they can come back and I'll hypnotize them for free. Everything else is the same price. Weight loss, because it's complicated, usually takes at least 5 sessions. And then after that, it's expensive. And I will say to them, you've had 5 sessions. Obviously, you've been coming back. So this is helping you. You can come to me anytime, but you tell me, do you want to do this or not? And I had someone who came to me a few years ago who lost 150 pounds those 5 sessions. She came for 4 sessions and then we sort of saved a 5th one. She bought what I call a package.
Right.
I said, maybe if you hit a plateau or something, it gets complicated or something, then use that 5th session for that.
Uh-huh.
And she was amazing. It took her about 2 years to do it.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, things happens when you're losing weight. People die. You know, things in your life change and it's harder.
Yeah.
And she would say when she got home from work, she would have her gym bag there. And she said, the television will still be here.
Yeah.
I'm going to go. And she did it. She did it. I'm incredibly proud of her. We email each other on our birthdays.
Cool.
I still have contact with her. And then there was another person. She didn't need to lose that much. But after the 5th session, she said, this is working. I'm going to keep going. I can afford it.
Oh, cool.
So it depends.
Yeah.
And, you know, she lost about 75 pounds, I think.
Oh, wow.
And one time she came to my office with the pants she was wearing when she came to see me the first time.
Oh, cool.
And I just looked at the pants and I said, I can't imagine you wearing those now. I can't even see it. But she just said, I wanted to show what these look like now what I look like now. So neither of them have gained the weight back.
That's very cool.
I know that. Yeah.
Wow.
That's cool.
Impressive.
Because, I keep gaining and losing the same 30 pounds about every 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm currently want to lose that 30 pounds again.
Well, I don't know what you did, but I knew that you told me that you were doing it.
I ate less and exercised. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's pretty much it.
Yeah, I know.
But people eat for a lot of reasons that have nothing to do with being hungry. I have sort of a list when people want to lose weight and I say, here, and you know, check of the time I'm bored, I'm angry, I'm sad, of those reasons that people eat.
Right.
And we get down to that too. And if you're just bored, let's do something else besides eating.
it's not that for me.
It's different for different people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, I know a lot of people that eat like that.
We live in a culture where food is like everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's part of the problem.
And portions are huge. There's so many factors to it. You're absolutely right. Like people do eat for a lot of different reasons. And then much like a lot of things, once you see it, once you realize it, it's usually difficult to go back. Once you see like, I only eat when I'm bored. And then once that comes and you're like, oh, well, then I shouldn't eat. I should do something else. And that's how those behaviors start. So I totally see how that works.
Well, you know, I'm sad or I'm angry at someone and you can't do anything about it. You don't always aware of it yet.
Yeah.
But the thing is, especially with needing to lose weight, if you know, go and eat ice cream and then afterwards you beat yourself up for it. And that's one of the things that we talk about is, you know, you just slipped. Don't worry about it. Okay, next time you do something different. And we try and work that out because when people start beating themselves up, that's not helpful.
That does not help.
Either.
No.
It does not help at all.
Bad. Too bad that doesn't help.
Too bad because we're all really good
at it. We're all good at it. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So do you think, is there the difference between the unconscious and the subconscious?
Yeah.
Are those two different places?
Your conscious mind is where you make decisions.
conscious mind, but what about the unconscious versus subconscious?
You know, that's more of a...
is that just a term?
It's just different in England. I know people who are hypnotists in England, and they say that it's conscious, subconscious, and unconscious, which I don't think, if you're unconscious, you're asleep.
Right. But your little brain is working.
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
I have kooky dreams. I mean, supposedly we heal ourselves through our dreams sometimes too.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And you beat yourself up in your dreams too.
Yeah. And you solve problems in your dreams too.
Yeah.
And you solve problems there. There's just a different way of looking at it a little bit. I just talk about your conscious and your subconscious. That's what I work with. If they fall asleep, they're not going to hear me. So,
right. I see what you're saying.
And people do fall asleep with me, and I usually gently wake them up, and I will say, this is too expensive for you to sleep through it. you have to be awake.
Makes sense. Yeah.
I know there's hypnotic suggestion, and then there's analysis, which you've talked about, like figuring out why people smoke or why people read. Mm-hmm. For people who don't know, what would be the difference between hypnosis for suggestions and hypnosis for analysis?
Well, I don't analyze anything really. It's what I do is change behavior by going into your subconscious, but that's not really what's going on. I just talk to them while they're hypnotized, and we figure out what's going on in their subconscious. Like I said, why are you sad when you're eating? And with quitting smoking, most people think that the doctors and the tobacco companies made this big deal about, it's a really addictive substance. Which is actually not true. The reason that people have a hard time quitting is because it's everywhere. Cigarettes are everywhere.
Mm-hmm. I used to smoke.
They're easy to get. Or actually, I say this to all of my clients. If you had to go to some horrible town or area where you have to go up some stairs where there's rats and everything, and it was really, really scary at 2 o'clock in the morning, would you be smoking? Mm. And most of them go,
good question.
No. Yeah. And I said, well, then it's not really an addiction for you.
That's
not a terrible one.
Because if it was heroin, you might be willing to go up those.
Be willing to
they do anything.
Exactly. I think that for most people, quitting smoking is a little bit like quitting coffee, which, believe me, I have done a number of times. But I don't really have to quit. Because it's not hurting me. It's just, I was trying to be pregnant and things like that. So when I have quit drinking coffee, for 3 days, I'm a bitch. And then I'm fine. And I have a headache.
Oh, right.
And then it goes away. And I'm fine. And when I go past the Starbucks, I go, that smells so good. But other than that, I'm fine. And I say, that's probably going to be for you with quitting smoking.
You mean if you're talking to your person?
My client. It's going to be like that.
I quit by smoking one less a day every day. I smoked about a pack a day for a couple of years at least. I know. It's amazing. I wanted to quit and I tried several times. It didn't work. And maybe time number four, I decided to smoke one less a day every day until I got down to one a day. Mm-hmm. I did that for a little while. And then I actually developed something that was like, it was called like a pre-ulcer or something. I had like it's searing pain in my stomach. It was incredibly painful. I went to a doctor and he did whatever test he did. And he said, you're about to develop an ulcer.
Oh my goodness.
And he said, if you stop smoking completely, it will go away. And I did. And it did.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
It's weird, right?
Yeah.
Acid. So it's an acid producing thing among all the other bad things. Yeah. It actually ended up not being that hard because I had lowered the amount. I was doing it so much. So now, and this was a long time. This was when I was 32, maybe, is when I quit smoking. And I'm like 105 now. And I look fantastic. I realize.
Yeah, you do.
Almost lifelike.
But once in a blue moon, I actually still have a cigarette and I call it a holiday cigarette and I have one. It always makes me feel terrible, like physically terrible, not guilty, whatever. And I don't want another one. Like the most I've ever had is when I was doing a play in Scotland, I had one or two a day. It's very hard not to smoke in Scotland. Let's just say.
Yeah.
And it was easy. It was no problem at all once that experience was over. And I was back and didn't have any more. So
that's disgusting. Totally disgusting. Not Scotland, it is. The smoking.
No, I shouldn't have any at all. And I haven't had one now, I don't even know, 9 months or something. I don't know how long it's been.
I grew up in the no smoking campaign, so I've never smoked. None of my friends, nobody my age even smokes. It's weird.
Everybody smoked. The woman who drove us to school chain smoked Larks, the charcoal filter. Yes,
I remember.
Windows up in the wintertime, chain smoking.
I grew up bombarded about not smoking and not doing drugs constantly as a child, bombarded. Don't do drugs, don't smoke. Don't do drugs, don't smoke. And I guess for a lot of us, it just stuck. I mean, some of the drugs, we smoked weed, but we...
I was going to say, I know you smoke weed.
We smoke weed, but like not cigarettes and nothing like more extreme than...
Right.
...than marijuana. But the idea of smoking a cigarette literally makes me sick to my stomach. I can't stand
when I smell it.
It's gross. The smell is the worst thing, and it is gross. And the few times I still have one, I always hate the smell. I'm always like, oh, I don't know why I did that. And it makes me feel bad because it's poison and you can feel it. And I know I'll never start smoking again. I know it. Right. Now.
I think it's cool that you found a way that worked for you to quit, because like everybody's different.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. You are actually, in a way, one of the lucky ones.
Yeah.
I tell my client, you can't ever pick up a cigarette ever again.
I think that's true for a lot of people.
And if you do, guess what?
You're going to start smoking.
You know, first you'll mooch some for other people, then you'll get a pack because you feel guilty because you're, and then if you have them, then, you know, you start smoking.
Now, what it told me is that I probably don't have that addictive a personality.
I don't think you do.
Because when I was in college, unlike Quinn, I did drugs. I did every drug once or twice. If I didn't like it, I would do it a couple more times just to double check. I did coke a few times. I hated coke. And I did it a few times just to double check. Never liked it. But the ones I liked, I did meth one time.
Oh, my goodness.
Before I knew about the holes in the brain and your teeth falling out, I know, it was a little crazy. Because my best friend was a pharmacy student, and he would get drugs from a doctor. This is terrible. But I felt like it was safe if I did it with him. I had it all worked out in my tiny little 19-year-old brain. And so I would do things with him that he recommended, and meth was...
He recommended?
I would do it with him that he recommended. Meth was amazing. I understand why people are addicted to it.
Well,
it was incredible.
I don't do hard drugs. I didn't say I've never tried them. I do get meth's appeal, although I disagree about cocaine.
I couldn't get in.
That I could ever do. I can't do it. But the couple of times I did do it, I had a great time.
I'm too jumpy.
I'm not an addictive person that way either. So
yeah, I just don't want to do all this. I did acid once. It was fantastic. I knew it would be terrible if I ever did it again. So I didn't want to do it again. I did mushrooms once. It was great. I did it again. It was terrible. I was like, see, prove my point. Only good once. And that was basically my deal.
That's
and then
our
my
drug
friend,
section.
My pharmacist friend, it's our drug section. I'll close with this. My pharmacist friend, he did heroin once and said it was amazing. He never did it again either, but he told me not to do it at all. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay. The end.
I couldn't inject myself with anything. I couldn't do that.
I'm not a fan of any of it, really.
That's not fun. Know. This just turned into like healthcare. No. I want to have fun. Like, I don't want to do it.
Exactly. Like, yeah. But if I were a more addictive person, I don't think it would have been as easy for me to say like, oh, that was great. I'm never going to do that again.
Everybody's on sort of a spectrum, and some people can be addicted to anything.
Yeah.
You know, you give it to them, they will. And those people that I said that, will they go to the Bronx to get cigarettes?
Let's not just slam the Bronx.
Man. Yeah, I know. I shouldn't be saying bad things. I live in Connecticut. People are afraid of the Bronx.
I was going to say, you better take that back, girl.
No, I don't have a problem with the Bronx. I live there. Some people will say, oh, yeah, I'd be there.
Wow.
And those people, I give them credit for realizing that. And I say, look, you can still quit. I've had clients who stopped drinking, but they're still smoking. And they will say, you should see it outside an AA meeting. There's a bunch of people smoking.
So much smoking in AA meetings.
Yeah.
So much. Yeah. And pounding the coffee, pounding it.
Yeah. And she said, I've got to stop smoking or, you know, that'll kill me.
Yeah.
And it's there's nobody lives longer because they smoke.
Oh, God, no. No, and my skin, one of the things that got me the best, like once I was really had quit smoking, not smoking, my skin looked better in less than a week. I looked in the mirror one day and I was like, oh, my God, that's a big difference. Mm-hmm. that just told me you're not putting poison in your body anymore. That's how come, you know?
Yeah, they really are poison.
Mm-hmm.
So it's that I think a lot of hypnotists, that's one of the things they do the most. Although I will say that in the last maybe 4 years or 5 years, there's been a lot of vaping. Okay.
I think vaping is
terrible. I do know people who vape.
Oh, so do I.
What do you think about it? That's a very millennial thing, I think.
I don't like it. It's better than smoking, don't get me wrong. A vape marijuana, it's not as disgusting. If you kiss somebody who's vaped, it's not like kissing a smoker. I get the appeal. I'm just not that kind of person. Like, you know, I don't smoke as much as I did. Yeah, at this age, I don't really like putting smoke into my body at all.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of why I shy away from it. I will do an edible. I will, you know, eat a brownie maybe. Like, I'm more leaning towards that as I get older. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of upkeep to vapes. You have to get the batteries and buy more and all that stuff.
Oh, really? Okay.
And you have people who, like, go out and make the big clouds and, like, they just pose and all that stuff. And I'm like, no, that's not for me.
It's so weird. And speaking of pot, though, you know, New York just legalized pot.
They did it. I heard them talking about it the other day.
Yeah. So
Cuomo lost enough power for it to happen.
I guess.
I think he was supporting it. So at least near the end he was.
He's grasping at straws. Yeah, he's just trying to survive. So one more thing I wanted to ask you, Meg, is when you tell people you're a hypnotist, what is the reaction that you get?
It can go all over. I usually say something like, yeah, I'm the only one in the cocktail party.
You were the only one at the catering job for sure. Everybody else is like, I'm an actor. Oh, I'm a hypnotist. Yeah. Really?
Some people are afraid of it. One time there was somebody in a networking group and I was going to have a meeting with her. And I said, and if you come to my office, I'll hypnotize you. And she said, I can't be, somebody might not like this, but she said, I'm Catholic. And I've had tons of clients. I'm
Catholic.
On my intake form, I ask people their religion. I'm not going to mess around with somebody else's religion. I think 2 weeks later, I was helping somebody quit smoking, and he was a priest. He's still a priest.
And you hypnotize him out of being a priest.
But I said, when we're all finished, can I ask you a question? And he said, oh, absolutely. Well, you know, there's priests that feel this is bad and people who don't, but I can guarantee they don't really know what hypnosis is.
Because they think it's supernatural or something?
No, I think they think that somebody else is taking control of, which that can't happen. I can't.
Only they can do that.
Yeah, only
they can. I was going to say. That's so weird.
It's not mind control. Couldn't do that. If I wanted to, I couldn't.
It's not like during hypnotism, you're suddenly going to make them a critical thinker. Okay, I'm kidding.
Well, the mainstream media has done just as much against hypnosis as it does. This dissociative disorder.
Who's a hypnotist? It's just awful. We need the hypnotism. We need to make it a little bit more user friendly and what it really is. We need to do a key part.
That is to be done for hypnosis and for DID, because the media is completely dissociative identity disorder, or MPD, what multiple personality disorder is what people know it as. But it's a whole thing that the media has turned into this crazy circus that it's not. And those are like two things that the media loves to constantly go over: hypnosis and multiple personalities. It's funny.
You mean to misrepresent.
To misrepresent it, yes.
Exactly. Uh-huh.
I went to a movie once that had a hypnotist in it. And I was the only person in the theater. It was very strange.
Wait, you were the only person there?
I was the only person who went to the movie.
Oh,
wow.
It was a big new theater, and I was the only one there. And so I kind of wanted to know what people, well, I already know that the media don't really know what hypnosis is. I watched it. It wasn't a particularly good movie. The hypnosis was good, but the hypnotist had an affair with one of her clients, which is unethical. Course. And I was going, oh, for crying out loud, you got the hypnosis part. Right. And then you had to do that.
Right.
So it was just, we just were getting a bad rap. When I tell people, it's not what you think it is. I help you just change your behavior by going to your subconscious to help you figure out changing the way you think of things. Mm-hmm. Because you know perfectly well that smoking is a stupid thing to do.
Well, I wanted to quit for years before I finally did. Yeah.
And they say, well, I can't quit. And I say, yeah, of course you can. I will help you do it.
Yeah.
So that's really all I say. And then I help them. I keep saying, it's going to be a lot easier than you think. And I can't guarantee it will, but you know, it'll be a lot easier than you thought.
Yeah. Well, Meg, I'm so glad that we had you on to talk about this, because I think hypnotism needs to be better represented in the media.
Thank you.
And we'll start with our little show here.
thank you very much.
This was fascinating. And thank you so much for coming. I hope you have fun.
Yeah, I did.
Cool.
Thank you. Why don't you tell people where they can get more information, maybe get some of your services if they like?
I have a website, www.meghypnosis.com. And so if you go to YouTube and look up my name, I have a video for people who can't sleep.
For people who can't sleep, right.
You should listen to the recording.
I definitely will. And we'll sort of post those links.
We'll put your contact stuff on our website as well, too. Awesome.
This was really fun. Thank you very much.
Cool. Yeah. Well, thanks for coming.
And it was nice to meet you, Carol. It was wonderful to see you again after the pandemic.
You too. I know. God.
It was great to meet you.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right. Well, we'll be in touch.
Over and out.
Bye, Meg.
Bye-bye.
That was so interesting.
It was interesting. I don't know a lot about hypnosis. I know small things that I learned in school, but not a lot. I've never actually spoken to a hypnotherapist, so that's interesting.
Yeah. I might use her services. I don't have trouble sleeping. I am concerned about the weight thing, so there's that. And I have had anxiety about auditioning before. I'm a much better auditioner than I used to be, but I saw on her website that she helps people with that, too. And sometimes I procrastinate, so maybe she can help with that.
Me too.
I don't know.
We have a lot of things in common. We're both Leo, so we have a lot of those.
I think we're procrastination twins, which is not great.
It makes this show so interesting.
Yeah.
It's always the last minute.
Well, we're getting better, sort of.
I've been working out regularly. And
I have been thinking about it regularly.
You've been thinking about starting...
I'm fixing to get ready to start thinking about. I have not done that much better. I have to say, it's been another week that cascaded into a bunch of dominoes from hell. It's my work week. It's a bullshit excuse. Bullshit. I'll fix it. Don't worry.
Well, there's always next week. That's what she said. Don't beat yourself up about it.
Tomorrow. Keep going.
So wait, we didn't have a lot of time to talk about Star Trek.
Right.
If you'd like to go deeper into it.
Well, I think we covered it enough, unless you had something to add. I just thought it was great. I just had this image in my head of what Martin Luther King said, something like Black families, Black children, they're all watching this at home. And it just gave me so much delight because I love Star Trek across the board. But the original show, oh my God, it's so good. And I just loved the image of that, of all these Black families in America when so much shit was against them and still is, that they were digging on this show, which is one of the most progressive and amazing shows that's ever been on the air. I mean, just the first biracial kiss, which apparently was an enormous deal.
Mm-hmm.
And all the cool stuff she got to do, like that she was a woman in charge and she was not the maid on the Star Trek Enterprise is the point. She was not the maid.
She was a language specialist. She spoke like 7 languages. My mother was a really big Star Trek fan. That's how I became a Star Trek fan.
Oh, cool.
And my mother's not even a sci-fi person. My mother watched it strictly because she had a crush on William Shatner as a little girl, and she loved Uhura. That's why...
Very handsome.
He was. He was a handsome guy. Yeah. And that's why she got into it. I think this could be part of the reason why Black people are really into sci-fi and fantasy. Mm-hmm. It could be the start of it. It was one of the first things, if not the first thing, to actually include Black people into the sci-fi realm and in the future. Because this was a future example of racial harmony. You had white people, you had Asians, Mr. Sulu.
Mr. Sulu.
You had all these people working together.
You know? And then in the more modern versions of Star Trek, you had people with various disabilities. Mm-hmm. You had even more multiracial. And each one from the beginning had somebody from a different planet that everybody treated the same. You got your Vulcan, you got your Data, you've got your, what was he, a robot guy?
Klingon.
And the Klingon. Oh my God. I love.
And you
love
have, him. And then of course, when I was a kid or when I was a little before my time, but then I had Whoopi Goldberg. So it was like, great. Like it's.
Oh my God. I forgot about that. Yeah. And what did she like run the restaurant or something on the starship?
Yeah. Yeah. And she said part of the reason she did it was because she liked Uhura. So there's a lot of that.
Yeah. So that was just basically it. And there's a documentary about her now.
Did she pass away? No, she didn't.
No.
No. Okay. I heard that she's ill. I didn't know.
Okay.
We've lost so many people. Like Jessica Walter just passed. And
yeah.
Cloris Leachman. Cloris Leachman really got me. I love Cloris Leachman.
Yeah,
very
me too.
Very funny lady.
Me too.
So like we're losing a lot of greats fast. Yeah. I guess one of the last things we can leave is Prince William was named
Sexy
Bald
Man.
What are
you talking about? What are you talking about?
How is Prince William named Sexiest Bald Man with Stanley Tucci standing right there? Like, how could that even happen? I mean, you got The Rock. You got Tiffany Haddish now. There's so many sexy people.
Is Tiffany Haddish in the competition for Sexiest Bald Man?
But she's bald and she's sexy. Oh. Like, there's so many people that...
I didn't know she was bald. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
She has alopecia?
No, she's completely went like Ninja Turtle on her head. She looks amazing.
Oh, she's gorgeous. Yeah. I didn't know that.
It's just like there's many people.
So many. I don't even know that he's in the top 10. I mean, he's okay looking, but
he's not even in the top 20.
Right?
He was like really good looking for like 5 years.
Who named him that? Piers Morgan?
I don't know. I can't even remember who. Piers Morgan. I don't get that royalist shit.
That don't make a lick of sense.
And white supremacy, I suppose.
I suppose.
But I don't get it.
Let's come up with a system where white people are just born royal. Okay.
I mean, a good way to evolve the system would be to make it diverse. Like, the royal family will not be a thing anymore.
Right. But
they won't pay for them anymore.
Did African countries have that? I don't know how it worked for a leader of a tribe. How do you become a leader of a tribe, though? Were they born royal?
You had to be like, it was like through, if you go like the pharaohs, like that's a different thing.
They
were born royal. They, whether their mother was a concubine or a conqueror person or whatever,
right?
Then they would be named as a god. Because like with pharaohs, like they were also like the living version of God. So they would be like the living version of Ra.
That's some bullshit right there. But
it is bullshit, but it's amazing. I've studied some Egyptology. It's crazy.
So you cannot separate royalty from white supremacy for sure. But it's also crazy humanness that you're going to elect certain people as born special and other people born trash. And they're not trash any more than you're born royal. That is bullshit. Calling bullshit on that. And I'm calling bullshit on him being the most handsome, sexy, bald man.
Who nominated him? Kate?
I don't understand.
You could go back in time and it's not even him. Like, who was
Yul Brynner? It's Yul Brynner.
Yul Brynner. Kojak too. I saw Kojak in an interview with somebody and he was like all like giving all this charisma and stuff. I was like, there's so many people.
Kojak's handsome. Not as much as Yul Brynner, though.
I wouldn't say handsome. Like, I think there's a difference between handsome and sexy. Like, sexy and handsome are two different things, you know?
Well, Yul Brynner is incredibly sexy.
Okay, I'll give you that. I've seen...
But I'll give you that with Kojak, too, for sure.
I say Kojak. I mean, I didn't buy it. It was whatever. But I could see a sex appeal from him.
Lou Gossett Jr. Very sexy.
There's so many bald people.
Mm-hmm.
That should have gotten that. Damon Wayans, for God's sake. Anybody.
Yes. My husband, Peter.
Your husband, bald. Peter.
His hair fell out bald. When he was 18.
My husband's now bald. He shaved his hair bald. He was losing his hair slowly and he decided to just say screw it. And now he's bald. He's bald like Peter now.
Yeah. Peter shaves his too because what grows in is just really not committed at all. So,
yeah. Like Donnie's hair isn't that. It's probably not as gone as Peter's probably is.
Yeah.
He didn't like the thinning towards the crown. He was like, I'll just cut it all off. I'm like,
oh yeah. No, Peter's a done gone. It's
done gone.
It's done. It's done, packed up and gone. It's gone.
I don't know. I felt bad that he was like, you know, watching your spouse lose their hair. It's not fun.
I didn't have to watch
it. I mean, well, not him.
Oh, you did. Okay.
I'm saying for me, watching him get kind of caught up. He wasn't like too upset, but you know, he was a little upset about it. And I'm like, here I am growing my hair out. I'm like, I can't relate.
It's got to be traumatic. It's got to be. God forbid if I lose hair. I'm a Leo. I've got to.
And women lose hair too.
I know. And it's horrifying. Yeah.
I don't think I'm going to lose my hair. Like, I hear you get it from your mom's side.
Yeah. My mom's hair thinned a little bit. I'm sure mine will get a little thinner, but.
My mother's father was bald, but I haven't lost my hair. And he was bald.
No, you have not.
So maybe it skipped me.
I think you took after your mama. That's what I think.
Maybe.
Mm-hmm.
My mama. Well, she just shaved her head down, like almost like Tiffany Haddish. So.
Wow.
Like she's got like a very short, like G.I. Jane cut now, which
I like that, man. If you can pull that off, I love it.
She always wore it short. She always used to wear like a sassy little short cut, but now it's like buzzed down. So she got her wigs that she can throw on from time to time.
There's more to show. And we actually didn't talk enough about voting rights, which we could talk about for 30 minutes. So we can't even get into that. But
that's something we can always talk about next week because they'll still be attacking voting rights then.
Yeah. And I'll just say a black woman was arrested for knocking on a door when thousands and thousands and thousands of white Trumpers were not arrested for breaking the goddamn door and windows and throwing poop at the Capitol. So
amazing how that happens.
Don't tell me there's no white supremacy, and I know you wouldn't tell me that. Okay.
No, I would never tell you that. Well, thank you all for joining us this Sunday.
Thanks for coming. Yeah.
This hypnotizing Sunday.
I hope we hypnotized. I didn't even get to talk about the fact that when I was little, I used to hypnotize my cat. I'll tell her that later.
I'm sure she'll be dying to hear that story.
Yeah, it's not really.
I just picture you like with a pocket watch swinging in front of a cat's face.
No, I would put a ticking clock in front of him, like a kind of clock you wind up. I'd put a ticking clock in front of him and he would stare at it. And I would say, "You're getting very sleepy." And his little head would fall asleep.
First of all, it's not hard to put a cat to sleep. But I know. You mean like an alarm clock?
There used to be clocks that you had to. There used to be clocks that you had to wind up.
Like with the bell on top.
Yeah, to make the clock work, you had to wind it up.
Oh. Okay.
And it would, and it had an audible ticking sound. It was like tick, tick, tick. I believed I was hypnotizing my cat, but nothing would happen except that he would fall asleep sitting up. That was the thing. He would fall asleep and his little head would just fall over and he would be like asleep. But then I couldn't make him do anything, or I couldn't even make him stop smoking. That cat smoked for his whole life.
I hate you. That snuck up on me. Thank you all for listening.
Call back. Okay.
I can't stand you, girl. I was really taking you seriously. Thank you all for listening. If you'd like to support the show, be sure to visit buymeacoffee.com/gonnabegood. If you want to join in on discussions and about the episodes, follow us and comment on Instagram and Twitter @thisisgonnabegood. Again, I am Quentin Lamar. You can find me at Quentin Lamar on Twitter.
I'm Carol Scudder. Oh God, do I have to do this again?
Yep.
You can find me. Why just find me? Can't you figure it out? All right, you can find me on, I can't even find it now. Carol Scudder at Twitter. And Carol Dan on Instagram. I don't know. I'm actually just guessing. I'm grasping at straws. You'll figure it out. I'll tell you next week. Okay, bye.
Okay, boomer.
That is very boomer.
A special thank you to Peter D for his original and great soundtrack for It's Gonna Be Good and for his editing skills. And remember to continue to listen and subscribe for free to This Is Gonna Be Good.
Woo!
I'm done with you, Carol. See y'all.
I'm done with you. Bye, y'all.
Bye.
I miss y'all.